theme through this year is discipleship and following Jesus. And through the 12 months, there will be 12 steps to following Jesus. So if any of you know the AA program, which is so helpful to recovery, we've got 12 steps of discipleship here. And do be praying, please, for that Alcoholics Anonymous group that began last week here on Thursday evenings. If you would like to make use of that group yourself, or if there's somebody else you know that wants to recover from alcoholism, then please do recommend them to that group, and I can give details to anyone. It just happens that it's two Christians that are actually coordinating and running that group, and do ask for any details, but pray for them every Thursday evening. So through January, in our discipleship thinking, we've been thinking about being called by Jesus to himself. By Jesus to himself. And we know that Jesus is addressed as rabbi or teacher. And we know that the word for disciple means pupil or learner. And there were many in those days, both Jews and Greeks, who took pupils on, or pupils decided to work with them so that they might learn and change their lifestyles, so that they might follow and grow in wisdom. But we see that Jesus' understanding of what it means to call disciples is far deeper than just the idea. Is this coming through on this one? Of being a teacher and a pupil. It's a far deeper idea. He didn't just let people choose him. He called people personally to himself. Their names are recorded. He called people not just to join his school, but to come to himself as a person. He called men and he called women. He called Jews and he called Gentiles. And he took this relationship of teacher and disciple to a new level. Come, follow me, he says. His summons is to come to me. He doesn't say, go to God. He says, come to me. And disciples of Jesus are disciples to a person. And that is what this month is set out to remind us. Not just to a set of values or principles, although, of course, those are involved with following Jesus. Discipleship means loyalty to a person, and not just to a church or a group of fellow disciples. And it's loyalty to a living person and not a dead teacher. As we'll be thinking tonight at communion, the resurrected Jesus still was calling people to come and be with him. And the teachings of Jesus and the loyalty he called for personally were too much for some people to obey. And that is even true today. Some people are reported by John as saying, this teaching is too hard. We can't swallow it, said the New English Bible translation. Who can listen to it? And the teaching of Jesus has to be empowered by Jesus if those people are actually to follow it. And today we're going to be talking about being alone with Jesus, just a small amount, being alone with Jesus. But last week's talk about being yoked to Jesus so that we might experience rest gives us some clues. It's a good lead-in. You remember that challenge, that invitation of Jesus to come to him if we are weary and heavy laden, perhaps weighed down with religiosity, perhaps just tired with those things in life that exhaust us, to come to Jesus and to be yoked to him, to find our restraint in him and our rest in him, to learn from him. That was the challenge. You will find rest as you take my yoke upon you. And in a way, following Jesus is rather like going and cutting a furrow, a plough, a team of oxen moving forward. And sometimes we feel that there's a thin line of obedience to following Jesus. It's a narrow road. It's almost as narrow as a furrow. And there's no compromise in Jesus when he expresses that call. Come to me. Follow me. No one putting their hand to the plough and turning back is worthy of being my disciple. So straight away we begin to feel unworthy. But that's really not the point that Jesus is making. He's calling us to that devotion to him, to walk that thin line of obedience. And in that we will find rest, we will find restraint, our souls will be at peace. And we're going to read this passage in Mark, and we're going to read the context as well. It's always dangerous to take verses out of the context, but we are going to look at this idea of coming to a quiet place where we will be alone and rest with Jesus. And we read from Mark 6, verses 30 to 46, and it's a passage you'll know well, and it's all about activity and exhaustion and resentment and compassion, and Mark records it for us to read. The apostles returned and met with Jesus and told him all they had done and taught. There were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his disciples didn't even have time to eat. So he said to them, "Let us go off by ourselves to some place where we will be alone and can rest for a while." So they started out in a boat by themselves for a lonely place. Many people, however, saw them leave and knew at once who they were. So they went from all the towns and ran ahead by land and arrived at the place ahead of Jesus and his disciples. When Jesus got out of the boat, he saw this large crowd, and his heart was filled with pity for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. When it was getting late, his disciples came to him and said, "It's already very late and this is a lonely place. Send the people away and let them go to a nearby farm and village in order to buy themselves something to eat." "You yourselves give them something to eat," Jesus answered. They asked, "Do you want us to go and spend 200 silver coins on bread in order to feed them?" So Jesus asked them, "How much bread have you got? Go and see." When they found out, they told him, 5 loaves and also 2 fish. Jesus then told his disciples to make all the people divide into groups and sit down on the green grass. So the people sat down in rows, in groups of hundreds and groups of 50. Then Jesus took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, looked up to heaven and gave thanks to God. He broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. Everyone ate and had enough. Then the disciples took up 12 baskets full of what was left of the bread and the fish. The number of the men who were fed was 5,000. At once Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to Bethsaida on the other side of the lake, while he sent the crowd away. After saying goodbye to the people, he went away to a hill to pray. Wonderful account, isn't it? You can just sort of imagine all that was going on and the resentment of the disciples. Well, what are they doing here? I thought we were going to have some real time with Jesus. You know, send them away, Jesus. You know, and Jesus is saying, "Will you feed them?" Jesus calls us to be alone with him, to seek out wilderness, to seek out the sparsely populated place, to find space to be alone with him. The apostles had been involved in Jesus' mission. They were going out. They were missionaries. They were the sent out ones. They were going out to plant new groups and pass on the message. And they came back really excited to Jesus, but they were exhausted. They were excited by what they'd seen, but they were absolutely shattered. And Jesus sees this, and instead of whipping them on to do even more, he calls them apart to be with him. He knows a place on the other side of the lake, 4 miles to get there. Unfortunately, the people guess their destination, and although it's a 10-mile run or slow jog around the top of the lake, they get there first to greet the disciples. So we know that the disciples would have had a hard row across the lake, that they would have had to share maybe the rowing or trying to put up the sails and tack against the winds. They get to the other side. We're told that Jesus' reaction when he gets there is one of the compassion. The disciples must have thought, "Oh no, here we go again." The disciples asked Jesus afterwards, after the teaching, to send the people away. But Jesus sets about training the disciples to feed the people spiritually and physically. Jesus demonstrates, he models what they need to learn to do, what the church needs to learn to do in the face of human need. And at the end of it all, and having seen a miracle which must have amazed them and inspired them and refreshed them, they still need a rest. They're still absolutely shattered. You imagine the energy you expend in something when you're involved with people in need. You go to a funeral, you come home full of energy? No, you come home with hope, but shattered. You do something at the church, working with the children, or one of the drop-ins. You come home excited, but shattered. You know, we have humanity, don't we? And they are tired, they need a rest. And so Jesus kindly, I believe, sends them again into the boat, according to Matthew's version. No one can disturb them there. And I'm sure sometimes that's quite literally why they went off in the boat. And all fishermen know this. When you really ask fishermen why they bother to fish since they throw it all back and so on, so often it's just to be alone, to be quiet, to do something that refreshes them. He stays and he dismisses the crowd and he goes and finds a place on the hillside to pray. Jesus is quite capable of saying no, and he's quite capable of saying go home. But he can also continue when the need is pressing. He does have resources and reserves. And that is important, that we learn to have resources and reserves when they're really needed. Jesus gets this balance right, doesn't he, that we strive to get. Activity and withdrawal. He gets the balance and he calls us into this partnership with him, this yoking together, this finding of place and pace and purpose that only come from being linked to Jesus. And it's something that we take a lifetime to know, and yet we're still learning at the end. Because, of course, our energy patterns change. Our understanding of situations change as we become older. And in every aspect or season of our life, we have to learn that balance. And also, some people in their 80s are full of energy. Some people in their 30s are exhausted if they're parenting children or perhaps holding down a very stressful job. It's not just easy to tie it into age, but in every season and age of our lives, learning this balance is crucial if we're disciples of Jesus, if we're going to be able to work for Jesus, because he does call us into work. He does call us in to plough fields. He does call us in to be part of a team. Jesus calls his active and excited disciples to be alone with him and rest. Later in the epistles, things are written like, in case you grow weary of well-doing, of doing good, consider Jesus. Come back to him always, because you will tire. We learn to rest by taking on the yoke of Jesus. Christian people, we need that closeness to Jesus, which gives us both rest and restraint. Being yoked to Jesus means there are some alleys we can't go off at. But if we keep listening to him and feeling him, learning to feel that, he will keep us going. You know something? Even oxen rest in the stall together. They don't plough all the time. They eat, and they rest, and they work. Sounds like life to me. But they enjoy relationship. They eat, they rest, they work, they enjoy relationship. What else is there to life? Well, there's all the creativity that goes with that and the wonderful things. But that's what we thank God for every day, isn't it? Our life, the world we live in, the good gifts that God gives us, our relationships with others. That's what we're thanking God for. But getting it right by walking with Jesus, the oxen who work, the oxen who rest in the stall. But this incident marks out for us so helpfully how nearly impossible it was for Jesus and those who follow him, like us, who are on the move, to carve out time to be alone and actually stop ministering to others and to receive from Jesus ourselves. We need time to be ministered to by Jesus. Well, I do. One of the reasons why I'm a Christian is just enjoying that ministry of the living Jesus. Not just reading books about him, but just enjoying that ministry of Jesus. And as in Jesus' days on earth, the people and their pressing needs of leadership and practical help exhausted the disciples, exhausted to the point where they nearly tipped over, so too we know that. If we are active in God's work, we'll all have known that. We may learn with age to pace ourselves better. We may become lazy, whatever. But we need to learn that balance. Add to the pressures of Jesus' day all the electronic catalysts we have, like email and mobiles, and in despair we ask, where can I go to be alone? Where can I go to be alone with Jesus? I wonder if you've asked that this week. You may not have phrased it exactly like that, but you've thought it. Where can I get some peace and quiet? Where can I just have some time for myself? If you haven't ever asked that, you're an unusual person. Within every human being, and not just Christians, is the implanted need, the created need, to discover solitude with God, whether on our own or in groups, and both are important. What robs us of this? Well, there may be many things, but for many people, I think what robs us is the needs of other people. That's what robs us of those times alone with Jesus. Even if we say it's all Christian work, it's all Christian doing, it's family imperatives. Some people can never say no to other people that come to them from the church, because those people are demanding. They have needs, or they make it quite plain that they do. Some people can never say no to family. Very often in East London, I've noted that is women. Sometimes it's men, but more often it is women who can never say no to the needs. But it becomes a self-driven thing sometimes. It's not just that there are needs, but we need to be needed. Sometimes as a pastor, we feel we need to be needed. We need the positive strokes of being appreciated by people. Oh, isn't she a wonderful pastor? She visits me. Isn't she a terrible pastor? She doesn't visit me. Does she give time to so-and-so? And so it's not just mothers or fathers that make mistakes. We all are learning what it means. Sometimes it is the needs of people that rob us of time with Jesus. But sometimes it's our foolishness that we don't listen to Jesus saying, come apart. The voices of human beings have become more important than the voice of Jesus. What will we do about it? For some people, they're robbed of the presence of Jesus because they're frightened of being alone. They're frightened of being just with themselves and God. And so the iPod in the ear, the TV in the home, the mobile are never silenced. And it is a tremendous problem of our day that we cannot silence those wonderful things. I have been in so many homes where the television is always on, and I'm very sorry, but that is ludicrous. I have sat next to many people that cannot sit in stillness or quiet and have to have the iPod on, even when they're driving the car. There's nothing wrong with that, but can it ever be silenced? People who never switch off their mobile phone. I'm not talking about when somebody's ill and they have to keep it on. That's different. Sometimes we rob ourselves of time with Jesus because we are afraid of being in solitude and on our own. And I am a great radio listener, and sometimes I think, oh no, turn it off. There are many things, and you know perhaps some of the things that may rob you, and where perhaps just a little discipline is needed in listening to Jesus. The silent, and I say that, summons of Jesus is persistent, crying out within us, come to me, let's go off by ourselves. There are over 200 retreat centres in the UK, and most of us will make promises to go to them at some point. Some of us will say we can't afford it, but they are there. Some of us have to make our own little retreat centre. I've known people who've emptied out the cupboard under the stairs, and they put a little bit of carpet and a rug in there and a little cassette player, and every day that's where they go. And they make a little retreat place, a little corner of a room that they've got somewhere. And sometimes they put a little vase of flowers there. They may have a wooden cross there or something like that, but a place where they can go. Don't light candles under the stair. If you go under the stair, don't light a candle. You might well set the whole place on fire. But to be with Jesus, how can we find space and time to be with Jesus in our situation, which is the city? How can we sustain our spirituality, some people would say? Well, Sunday is so important. It is a day amongst a whole Sabbath. Our Sabbath is to be 24/7. But to set aside a day, one in seven, which is a day which has that priority of retreat and rest and worship, is absolutely vital. Especially if we have to work some Sundays, still finding time in the week or later on that day is important. It's vital to give ourselves that treat of being with Jesus and to be with God's people. The residential that's planned, the church holiday, is to take account of our humanity, that we need friendship and fun and reflection. And so we may make something like that a priority. As a family, we may say we book a holiday into Centre Park instead of to Disney Paris, that we get outside and we reflect and we walk. You know, and rather than spending thousands on Disney Paris, we go to Centre Park. Or we find a little bed and breakfast where we can go as a family. We choose what to do as families. And on those family times, we think about maybe praying together. If we don't say grace, maybe saying grace. We think about doing something that actually allows us to be with Jesus. We think about what we're doing. We're not driven, we're being yoked with Jesus. The leaders of the church have a 36-hour residential at Aylesford Friary to discuss, but to be together in relationship and to pray. I would worry about any church whose leaders did not take time to pray and to be with Jesus. And we make use as evangelicals of other parts of the Christian tradition, particularly the monastic tradition, where we can learn to reflect and to pray. We make use of that tradition and realise that it has a richness that we have often not known ourselves. And so you could go on, particular conferences and things that you might make use of. But we actually recognise that we need to be with Jesus. And if we feel burnt out now, it is probably for a variety of reasons. We may be physically ill and run down. Many people are, following the flu bugs and things like that. We may have been through a time of bereavement or family difficulty. But our spirits need replenishing. And Jesus is saying, come to me. Let's go off by ourselves. Jesus gives you the freedom to say no to certain things. And that may include when work gets so bad that you have to speak to a manager or somebody else and say to them, this is too much. Jesus says, come to me. And we need to stop some of the excuses. You remember the one about the banquet? You know, all the things we've got to do. Even as busy parents, working people, whatever our stress, we must find time. Making use of creative things. If you enjoy cooking, if you enjoy gardening, do those things with Jesus. There have been thousands of people who have said They can peel carrots and experience the presence of Jesus. They enjoy the presence of Jesus. But it's that closeness, isn't it? He's here. I'm yoked to him. I'm yoked to him. Jesus is model, and we do well to follow it. We're going to take a whole month thinking about prayer and discipleship. Was every morning to get up early. People laugh that the only time I can often be quiet in a week, believe it or not, is Sunday morning when the world is still asleep. You must find time to be with Jesus, or you will not grow as a disciple. You will lapse into nominal Christianity. You will be powerless and shriveled up. At the beginning of this year, I say this to you, you must find time to hear Jesus and to answer. And we pray when we are busy. Jesus refused to let human need and his disciples' reluctance actually stop his practice of going away to a lonely place in solitude to pray. We must listen to 2,000 years of Christian life and mission. We must. Western society is too busy, and I suppose the rest of the world is usually too poor, but we must find time in the midst of people's needs and family needs to be with Jesus, or we will not have strength for the moral and spiritual battle. We will not have strength to say no when temptation comes. We will not have strength. Jesus knew when he ministered that power or virtue went out from him, and he was depleted, he was exhausted. And so it was his practice to find a place where he could pray. We need this renewal of mind, body, and spirit. We know this. Some people are lazy and self-consumed, but we're here, so I'm assuming that we're not. But the Lord wants to be with us. He's not driving us, he's calling us. John has already referred to the prophet Isaiah, and it's to him I turn at the end of this talk to bring you two warnings that Jeremiah brought from God. They were warnings about ignoring God, and they were warnings about not having the reserves, the fountains, the old word is the cisterns, where they could draw water from God, and making their own cisterns and their own storage things by saying, I'm going to get it that way. We believe that we come to Jesus, and all the wonderful aids that there are in music and de-stressing and all these things are really just a part of what Jesus gives, but we must come to the person. This month is about coming to the person of Jesus, not just using techniques that God gives, but coming to the person, Jesus. And the prophet Isaiah brought God's words, and he said, hundreds of years before the coming of Jesus, my people have committed two sins. They have turned away from me. That was the first thing. They weren't coming to Jesus. They may not even realize they turned away and were walking away. And then secondly, the spring of fresh water they've turned away from. That's the first thing. They've turned away from God's source of life. And they have dug cisterns, cracked cisterns, that can't hold any water at all. And all our human efforts to create different spiritualities and religious systems do not hold water. So when you need it, it's not there. In your house, if your tanks are not filled up, in your loo or in your bathroom, if there's no water there, when you come to need it, it won't be there. And in our human lives, the things we construct, the systems we make, the systems, the different religious systems, whatever, they will not hold water. We need to turn back to God, to come to Jesus, for those springs of fresh water. And this is Jesus saying this to us personally. Come to me. let's go off by ourselves. Sometimes we do that completely on our own, and sometimes we do it with a group of other disciples. But that's what he's saying to us. Come to me. Simple message to go home with, isn't it? Let's just respond, shall we? If the musicians can join me, that's fine. But let's just listen to the Lord, what he's saying to us. If we want to say something out loud, that's fine if it will help others. But let's just respond. Into those arms of love. Let's experience them around us. Number 334, let your living water flow over my soul.